This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 243 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com. And joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, returned from India, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling like a Shetland pony.
Bit horse.
A little horse. Yeah, a little horse today. Gone, losing the voice just a little bit. Just, I'm actually just putting the deep dulcet tones on for all our lady listener.
Listener. Nice. So how was India?
You know, it was fabulous.
Mate, your images were just awesome.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm not that happy with them.
And why is that?
Are we not our own worst critics? Are we not the hardest people in our photos of anybody else on the planet?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we just be bloody satisfied with what we got? No.
Mate, you should be. Definitely. I noticed around about day 4, your lovely wife made a comment. She said, National Geographic rang and asked you to stop upstaging them. Now, I know she's biased, but I actually believe she's pretty much on the money. When I look at your images, I think these are absolutely on a par with the stuff that I've seen in National Geographic.
Well thank you. That's very flattering of you to say. Here's the thing. The light was god-awful.
Really?
It was, because it was all pollution, so there was no light. Okay, so, I mean, when you've got nothing but a massive smog...
Well, that just makes the sky one massive big softbox.
Yeah, but the problem is, I don't like soft, nice photographs.
Oh, okay.
I like punch and edge. I want to be able to I want to be able to craft with light and shape with shadows.
Right.
I want to be able to control the intensity of light on my subject's face.
Right.
And you don't get that when everything's all basically monochrome light. It's just this flat, blurt light.
Yeah, right.
But
you were putting people in doorways and windows and things, and that allows you to control some contrast.
That's the only opportunities where I had the opportunity to actually produce images that I was happy with. So the photos I'm most pleased with were the ones where I set up a little natural light studio in an old abandoned mosque.
Right.
In this complex of old buildings. And so it was basically, you know, 4 openings in this massive big domed stone carved stone building.
Yep.
I walked in there and the light was just fantastic.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'm here for the day.
Yeah.
I sat there, I was there for a good 3 hours.
Right.
And just interacting with people as they came through, and the faces that I wanted to connect with, the ones that would allow me to, I shot them.
Yep.
But once again, when you've got language barriers, it's hard to get people to pose and get everything you want out of them.
Yeah.
But at least I could control the light and how it's shaped and how it's sculpted, how it rim lit, all that kind of stuff. Which gave me my stronger images from the week.
You seriously are being critical, man, because I didn't see any bad photos from the stuff you posted.
we never post the bad ones, Bruce. Look, here's my crap photos. What do you think of those? No, but that's the thing. But you know, we should, with balance, you know, we should be always pushing to get better.
Yeah,
and the 2 absolutely iconic images that I saw, I wasn't allowed to shoot.
Oh.
You know, and that's just all, and you know, there was the images like the fish that got away, you know, when you go fishing. It's not the ones you catch, it's the one you lose.
Yeah.
So there's this incredible, wizened, old face Indian lady wearing this incredibly intense blue sari.
Right.
In front of this incredibly intense blue wall.
Okay.
So you had this, just she was blending into this thing, and it was the color, it was just stunning.
Yep.
No.
Please, why?
No.
Please, the
no.
Police.
On my knees,
filled
the alleyway. Please, no. Nothing I could do could convince this lady that you should. I mean, it was one of the images of my life it would have been if I could have caught it.
Yeah, right.
And then there was this another wizened old lady. I like the wizened old people.
Yeah.
Wearing just a drab brown sari. So really opposite to, but really dusky, dirty brown colour. Smoking a little cigarillo that they smoke on this stoop. But the wall behind her was almost exactly the same colour as a sari as well.
Right.
So it's all this almost monochrome brown
right
scene with this tanned face and there's smoke just wafting. Just stunning. Once again, no. Please, no. Hands and knees again in the laneway. No. Of course, when you're in a place that has exotic faces, I mean, you're surrounded by a million exotic faces. But your opportunity to shoot most of those is almost non-existent. Yeah, they're not either the timing, the placement, what else is happening just doesn't allow it to happen. So
you
suffer a fair degree of frustration. It's once again, I put the analogy like fishing. You know, you see a fish rise on a lake over here, so you cast to it.
Yeah.
It stops rising, but one starts rising to your left. So you cast over there, it stops. You know, it doesn't matter where you go, they're on the other side. But it is. India is definitely one of the friendliest places to photograph. So people will call you in to shoot them.
Right.
Which would be awesome if they were all the old wives and old faces that you want to shoot. But when it's just moderately handsome or just normal looking folks, like, oh, I'm wasting my time here shooting you.
Yeah.
But so the landscapes weren't quite what I wanted because the light, once again, you get what you get. You don't get upset.
Yeah.
They're a record of the place. Reasonably well composed, but not well lit.
How far out of the city would you have to get away from the pollution?
Who knows?
Right.
A fair way. I mean, I travelled up to about an hour, but I mean, that's still in the city, of course.
Yeah.
But remember, it's this big, massive city. Beyond that, there's only villages before the next big city, bigger city.
Right.
And so you back to a similar sort of scenario again.
Yep.
So my next trip there, I think I'll just go hang out in the villages instead. And, because they do love their colour.
Yeah,
as well.
Right. Yeah.
And the other disappointing thing about the trip was the Diwali festival has sort of degenerated into a fireworks feast.
Oh, okay.
More so than a lighting. Than the real commitment to lighting over there.
Okay.
But that had its own fun, you know. I'm standing in the laneway outside my hotel. And I'm talking to the locals, we're all having a bit of a laugh, and everyone's setting off these massive fireworks everywhere. I mean, things the size of bazookas, these things. But then this guy rolls up with this massive roll, and one guy taps and goes, watch this. And this guy rolls this roll out about 40 foot long on the ground.
Right.
And they're 2-inch long firecrackers.
Yeah.
10,000 of them.
Oh, my God.
Down this 40 foot long, and you light one end, and these things... for 10,000, but the things fire off and fly at you.
Oh,
so you're being pelted by man, it was fun. So and everyone's laughing. You know, one massive like mega cannon that was firing these massive big exploding shells had like 10 tubes, fell over after the first one and proceeded to fire at us down the street. And which way we ran, it chased us. That was fun.
I was rather envious of the place you got to go and visit on the, I think it was on the fifth day, the well.
The well, yeah. So the well is pretty amazing. And once again, that's another classic example of Indian balance in architecture.
Yeah.
Balance of dimensions and lines. And yeah, and to get a place like that to yourself is but you know what? It's just a well to them, you know, when you're surrounded by... incredible monuments, incredible ruins, incredible. It's just a hole in the ground where they used to get water. So to be the only person there was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But once again, it's like anything. If you don't compose it well, I was talking about the photo to somebody yesterday. So if you don't compose the photo well, then those lines go against you.
Yeah,
that symmetry can be your downfall if you don't. Do what it says and bend down to its balance.
Yeah. So overall, was the trip worth it?
Oh, I had a ball. Yeah, it was great. And I got most of the images I needed, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah. Met some great people. Yeah.
Cool.
Had a lot of laughs. Yeah. 3 car accidents.
Oh, seriously?
Rickshaw accidents.
Tuk-tuk accidents. Yeah.
Only one sort of serious where we sort of broke the tuk-tuk.
Oh, okay.
when this van decided, we're doing 40K down the road, and this van decided to just turn left right in front of us and just smash. So we took the van out too. That was kind of fun. I got hit by 2 as well. So 5 accidents in the week. It's not bad for 5.5 days.
Yeah.
So it's only one a day. Yeah, but I didn't get taken. But I didn't get a single I wasn't ripped off by anybody, you know, other than the obligatory, I paid too much for my taxi rides, I paid too much for any drinks I bought, all the normal stuff, that's okay, you live by that, but I got my face shaved on my last day there, because I hadn't shaved for a week.
That's right.
So I'd been shaving, been photographing all these people being shaved in the streets, and I thought it was now quid pro quo.
Do a selfie.
He's done the shave, he's done the shave, he's done all this sort of stuff, and they're all having a laugh, and I said, okay, how much is it going to cost me? He goes, 100 rupees. So there's this sign on the wall, all in Indian, in Hindi.
Yeah.
I said, look up there. It says, look, here, shave, 25 rupee. Here is whatever it was. Face massage, 35 rupee. That's 60 rupees. You're charging me 100. What are you doing? You know, they all laughed. Yeah. So I paid 100. Because it's part of the experience, you know.
Yeah.
And when a tuk-tuk driver tries, says, 60 rupees. And you say, no, I'll give you 100. You know, the shock look on their face, you know. Because no one overpays.
No.
And
how much is a rupee, by the way?
60 rupees is like a buck.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, so we're not talking, yeah.
Not exactly giving away sheep stations then.
Yeah, I think my entire expenses for the week, which is taking tuk-tuks everywhere for speed and sheer fun of it.
Yeah.
All food, everything else, just is $200.
Wow.
includes like gifts for the kids, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So it doesn't, it's hard to spend money in a place like that.
Yeah.
What we call money anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
But so some of the images I was pretty pleased with when I could control the light. And there's a woman in a sort of a blue and pink sari, which I kind of really like.
Yeah.
And I met this family of, or this group of men from who knows where, and a couple of the guys in their little crowd were just awesome. So my favorite shot came from that little studio there. And of course, me getting photographed by them as much as them photographing me was all kind of fun.
Yeah.
So here's my trip, my tips for getting photographed, or getting to be allowed to take photographs of them.
Yeah.
Is whenever you see like a group coming along and they've got children, smile at the kids.
Right.
Try to engage the kids straight away, because if you engage the kids, all parents are proud of their kids.
Yep.
So straight away you've got this, this guy likes my kid. They just smile at you. Ha ha ha. And then, do you want to take a photo of my kid? Okay, yeah. But I'm coming to granddad in a minute. Just realised that. So I'll shoot your kid. But secondly is, if you see a group of Indians with someone that's worthwhile wanting to shoot, and one guy's shooting the rest of them with their phone, because that's pretty much all they use, offer to take their photo and include him as well. Oh, yeah, and then I'll take your photo too. And yeah, so right. You do the group shot for them, and then they all want to have a shot of you with the group. So that's kind of cool. Then you shoot granddad, yeah, or grandma, all these little things. You just try and find ways of needling your way into them, you know.
Yeah.
The casual walking down the street, there's a great face. I just happen to stand here for a minute next to them.
Yeah.
Until they engage you, you know, because there's this strange, you know, 6-foot white man. I mean, I went to places where I'm sure they rarely see Westerns.
Right.
I walked probably 70 or 80 Ks over the 5 days.
Wow.
Through the laneways of India, of Delhi, and I saw three white people, three Westerners.
Yep.
In the streets walking.
And you didn't feel unsafe at any time?
Only my very last. I'm a big guy, for starters, so I'm and here's my trick for places like that. I always walk with determination.
Yes. Yes.
And I always whistle.
Okay. To draw attention to yourself.
The whistle is nonchalant. He's comfortable. He's not anxious. He's just comfortable. He's walking with determination, like he knows where he's going.
Yep.
So this is a big thing. Maybe he knows someone near here.
Yep.
And he's whistling, so he seems reasonably. He doesn't seem apprehensive.
Yep.
He's not furtively looking around.
Yep.
So that's always been my plan. It doesn't matter where I go in the world. And it's always stood me in good stead.
Yep.
But, you know, when it's 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, and you're going down laneways that are pitch black with rats running across the place with all sorts of strange things going on, you know, I would never take someone else there, let's put it that way. A few people say, oh, can I come with you next time? Well, no, because I wouldn't want to. Yeah. I'd feel responsible for those people.
Yeah.
And therefore, I wouldn't do what I would normally do.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put them in. I wouldn't go to the places that I would go by myself. But on my last night, I was walking down. It was incredibly dark and fairly well off the beaten path laneway. And a guy, for the first time, offered me drugs. And that had never happened anywhere.
Wow.
No, thanks. I don't smoke. I've only got one lung, sort of thing. Which he had to laugh for. I went a bit further and someone, yeah, you're looking for women? No, yeah. And then a little bit further, this guy starts, he's on the phone, starts calling to me. He goes, oi, oi. I'm like, yeah, put my hand up. Yeah, whatever. Not interested. And he goes, no, oi. And he says, give me 1 minute. I said, what? He goes, don't go down there. You'll get beaten up. Yeah. There's gangs. They all mug you.
Right.
So I figured, okay, look, maybe after 5 nights of doing this, I'll probably push my luck. I'll turn around and start heading back, you know. And that was the end of my last walk around at night. And, yeah, that was the only time. And, look, I didn't feel threatened because, I'm a pretty experienced runner.
Sure.
I can run, at least faster than, hopefully, people that have legs aren't as long as me. duration might be an issue. I've got to get a good fast burst up. So I tend never to feel, but that could be just naivety as well. You know, I've never, in all the years of doing stuff, I've never got myself into any sort of problems.
Yeah.
Which is good because I couldn't find my way out of a wet paper bag. but I've been told when I get mad, I have a fair look at the devil in me. So I can be fairly scary looking. So that probably holds a fair bit of stuff. But that was, there was only one other time, which I didn't feel scared. I'm not a person who smiles very much.
Right.
You walk around, I've got a neutral expression on my face.
Okay.
I walked around everywhere with a smile on my face because that was, if you're smiling, people engage.
Yeah.
So I deliberately smiled everywhere I went and that helped break the language barrier.
Yep.
But then this one guy was walking along, and he's a fairly tough-looking dude, and he just turned around, he's just giving me a look of sheer evil.
Right.
I mean, it was not. It was determined to be intimidating.
Yep.
So I've just turned the smile off and turned my more intense stare back at him.
Yep.
And that lasted for about 0.3 of a second. He looked away really quickly and scurried off. But he tried. That was the only person who really tried to put something on me.
Yeah, right.
And tried to just try and to show that I was in his place.
Yep.
And that didn't last very long. So no, I felt very safe. Yeah,
cool.
I think the people are lovely. Yeah, they're incredibly friendly.
Yeah.
And I mean, within 10 minutes of being there, I was sitting down having a cup of tea with a family in the street, and as you do,
nice
testing out my drugs I use for trying to stop me getting travel sickness from food and stuff. So I thought, well, this is going to give them a good test 10 minutes into the trip. But that's just the kind of people they are. You know, I got sloshing around with tea everywhere I went, sort of thing.
Excellent.
It was a great trip. Said some pretty darn nice images out of it. More importantly, some great lessons out of it, which I think is important.
Okay.
So I'm building a travel seminar first up that I'm doing in February, which is like a 2-hour talk one night.
Right.
I'm really going to be going to a lot more into, the not composition per se, but emotional composition, emotional balance, visual tension, visual mass in photographs, all this sort of stuff. Really, sort of taking travel composition or any photograph composition to a lot more in detail than I'll ever do at a workshop where there's not really the time.
Right.
So that's sort of all the lessons I wanted for that are all there, which is good. So
cool.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. And I said, I'm still, because I've been, I'm a little bit hoarse, as you can tell. I came home to a wife who fell over with tonsillitis the afternoon I got home.
Oh, no.
Slept for 60 hours. I didn't see her for the first 3 days I was home.
Wow.
Just asleep in bed. I took her to the doctors twice, and that's all I saw of her.
Wow.
A 2.5-year-old who came down with tonsillitis. I, who came down with this horrible head cold, and now my 6-year-old sick. So it's been the weakest horribilis, I got to say.
Yeah.
So for the second time, I think, in the history of CPW, I've cancelled a workshop tomorrow for illness.
Yeah, right.
I just got to recover. I'm just in a, we're all in a bad way. So just exhausted from trying to look after each other.
Yep.
But, well, I'm powered on for our Shutter Zinc podcast business.
Well, I was just going to say, we won't keep it going for too long tonight. Earlier in the week, I caught up with a guy called Hire, who is the founder of Trigger Traps.
I know his young brother, Lower.
And I had a good chat with Hire for about half an hour, and that will be coming up later in this podcast.
Did you say Hire? Hiya, how you doing?
No, yeah.
Hello to the guy, wouldn't you?
So, So that will be coming out later. We've got a couple of things to cover, which will be quite brief. So I did say to Glenn before we started recording that we'd keep this short because he's obviously not 100% at the moment.
Yeah, so I've waffled on for the last 20 minutes and made it long. Anyway, we'll talk about it next week when I come up with some more stuff, and we'll discuss a couple of stories. Before I forget, though, I do want to throw out, for people who want to do a photo challenge, I came across this week, which I thought was pretty cool. Find a photograph on the internet that you really, really like.
Yep.
And try and copy it.
Okay.
Obviously try and make it something that's doable. Don't make it like the photo of the Taj Mahal.
No.
Because, you know, you've got to, yeah. But, and I saw a woman who, this came across my Facebook feed. She liked this photograph of this feather on a toilet roll with this out of focus blurry purple stuff in the background.
Okay.
So she tried, I don't know why she liked that photo, but this toilet paper is soft as a feather. But she then tried to emulate the photograph, and it's a great learning lesson. And just because people say, oh, I don't want people to copy my style, you'll learn very quickly how hard it is to copy what someone else does. That's a great challenge as well, to recreate something that you actually like.
Oh, absolutely. Look, 12 months ago I got involved because Chris Bellier had got involved with it. I sort of went, oh, what's that? And got involved as well with a thing called Pose Project Management. And it was basically a girl had set up this thing on Facebook, and she organized it by cities around Australia.
Yeah.
And basically what it was that she was finding source images from the net, posting them as inspiration, and then models, photographers, makeup artists would all pitch and say, you know, I'm interested in shooting that or doing makeup for that or modeling for that or whatever. And so I did a few of those projects, and the idea was to take this inspiration image and interpret it, either try and recreate it or use it as an inspiration for something else. And as you say, you know, trying to copy somebody else's image, you know, and to, you know, have to think about how they lit it.
Yeah.
You know, what sort of lighting, what distance, how much diffusion, you know, all that sort of stuff is quite challenging. But it was good fun.
Exactly.
Really good fun.
Yeah, and I like your twist on it, to then take it from inspiration and do your twist on it. You know, learn the lessons from how they created it, and then how can you alter that?
Yeah.
Both valid lessons in learning how to be a better photographer, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
So we got an email from Rakesh a few days ago.
We did? He's a lovely fella.
And he said, do you guys see the new offering from Queensberry? Haven't given it a try.
It's boring, Rakesh. Go away.
But it looks pretty good. Similar offering to Photo Merchant, I think.
Yeah, so anyone who's out there who's a photographer who wants to do an online portfolio for clients to look at and order from, then Queensberry... My biggest concern with those type of people, and I haven't looked into this one, is who's doing the output, who's doing the printing work.
Right. You know? Going from digital to the physical world.
Yeah, so I mean, the thing I always liked about Photo Merchant is they use NewLab/NewShots, which I know are the best printing quality in Australia, who I might add just whilst I think of it. They just won every printing category in the printing world at the recent printing awards for photo quality books.
Wow.
They won like 11 out of 11 categories.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean,
was this just Australian or?
No, worldwide.
Wow. And how many years straight?
5th year straight.
Wow.
How long have they been doing them for? 5 years.
Wow.
They came into the printing world and just blew them away 5 years ago and left them for dead for years.
And no one's caught up yet.
No, so I'm about to do an offer through my CPW page, actually, through NewLab, where everyone who signs up to my newsletter is going to get 2 free 8x10 metallic prints.
Nice.
Which is pretty good. So there's, I don't know, $3 worth of free stuff or something. I don't know how much that costs. it could be as much as $5. Who knows? But yeah, that's it. So, I mean, I've always loved their stuff because you know what you're going to get as far as quality goes,
right?
You know, and if you're working, that you need that. You don't. That's you need as few stresses in life as possible, and the end result of your work coming back is always one of those things for a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, Queensbury, I had a quick look at their site. It looks pretty darn nice.
Yep.
I just wanted to make sure if you've got control over who's doing your output. You know, can you select the labs? And if you can, great. Yeah.
Yep.
I think all those sort of online portals that make a photographer's job easier are great. The only problem with those sort of things are I would probably still like, if I was working as a portrait photographer, I would still rather be going through the process of showing the images on that portal to people live so I can sell to them.
Right.
You've got to sell the photos. You can't just put them up there and say, yeah, there's my photos and say how much it costs.
Yeah.
Because that's not what photography's about.
Yep.
It's about talking about the wonderful capture, the emotion of the say of the image, the emotion of why this one's special.
Right.
And why they should think it's special too.
Yep.
Yeah, you've got to educate people about what a great photograph is and why they're great in that photograph.
Yep.
And give people reason to be proud of the image rather than just, oh, that one's only $49, I'll take that one. You know what I mean? We needed one for the family for Christmas. Oh, well, we'll take that one. Yeah. Where's the joy in the photo in that?
So, yeah. Yep.
So if I was working with clients, I'd still rather talk to them about the photo and give them some passion about the image and show my passion for the image.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway.
There was quite an epic email that came in from David Marland, the self-titled 52nd seventh listener.
That's right. I met him at the digital show and he came up and said, oh, I'm your 52nd seventh listener. I love that.
So that really was an epic email, David.
He waffled on, didn't he?
He did. Fantastic. And I'm not going to read it this week because we're trying to keep this short. So
there are a couple of salient points that really should be mentioned, though.
Okay. So we will cover it. All right.
I love Lynn's no nonsense approach. He's fantastic. Oh, that was really good. There's another bit here. Glenn gave a short, it's about the digital show, gave a short expose on lighting and model using the softbox, neat, simple and straightforward, 10 out of 10. We should talk about that. And it's quite a contrast to what I saw on another stand when someone was using a multitude of gear, at least 3 softboxes, to get the same effects and looking deadly serious, and the images were boring too. Glenn is awesome. He was doing something. There we go. I've got to tell you, that's a great email. We should have more like that. You want to skip over that because you didn't mention how great you were. Oh, no, here's the that's Bruce too. Yeah. You didn't say that. But we did go on to some stuff about Terry Pratchett's Discworld
series, yes.
The light that's on that world. And yeah. Now, I think if you want to learn about the light on Discworld, sit down and read the 37 volume that's out there. Or
that's
whatever it is.
Yes, it's a massive, massive series. Anyway, I will leave that for next week and we'll go through that whole email next week.
Thanks.
Love you. Adam Davidson put up a couple of things on the Shutters Inc. page Facebook wall over the last couple of weeks. One I found very interesting was a tutorial on doing long exposures without having your noise reduction switched on. For anyone who's done long exposure photography, you would know that the biggest issue with using the noise reduction feature is that your camera then does a dark frame subtraction after you've done your long exposure. And if you've shot for an hour, then the noise reduction, you know, the dark frame subtraction is going to take another hour. So basically your camera is out of action for that whole second hour while it's processing the noise reduction for the hour you shot prior to that. So obviously, if there's a way that we can shoot long exposures without having to have the noise reduction switched on,
yeah,
then that's a hell of an advantage because it means you can shoot a 1 hour image, and as soon as you shut the shutter off, you're ready to set up and shoot the next one. So for anyone who hasn't checked out that link yet, do yourself a favor, particularly, you know, obviously if you're into long exposure photography, as I am. It's an interesting technique. It requires using Photoshop. It's not something you can do in Lightroom. And I've had mixed results with it. I will keep persevering with it. I won't spoil the fun and tell you how to do it. I'll just let you go and chase down the link, which will be in the show notes, and you can try it out for yourself.
It sure looks pretty good, though, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely. And in theory, it should work really well. Like I said, I've had mixed results, so I'm going to keep keep at it.
Yeah.
The other thing Adam posted was another Kickstarter project for a thing called Pixel Stick. Did you get to see this, Glenn?
I did, yeah, I did. It looks pretty cool.
It's a funky looking thing. Basically, it seems like it's a, 6 foot long light that's full of LEDs, but they're programmable.
Yeah.
So you can make these. Well, you just need to watch the video to see the range of things you can do with this.
I think it's probably best to put a link up there, and people who are interested in light painting, go look at it and get hot and heavy. I know my mate Frosty has put himself down for one on the Kickstarter program. So
right. And I would just like to say, don't tune out the moment you hear the term light painting. If you're the kind of person who goes, oh, that light painting stuff doesn't appeal to me, don't write this off until you've actually had a look at the video, because this is light painting to a whole new level.
And as I said the other week in the podcast, whatever type of photography that doesn't appeal to you, that you don't like or don't want to do, maybe that's the stuff you should be pursuing.
Or at least have a crack at it.
Well, I mean, it's going to challenge you. It's going to open up your ideas to new stuff, which could work in all other areas of your photography, In India, I shot a lot with a 50mm lens.
Right.
I hate the 50mm lens. I always hated the 50mm lens. I'm still not too partial to it, but I force myself to use it because, the things you're avoiding or the things that challenges you to do stuff new, and it forces you to be better. And that can only be a good thing.
Are you averse to the 50mm for the same reason I was prior to Borneo, that it's not wide enough to be exciting as a wide angle, and it's not telephoto enough to be, to give you that nice compression?
No, I just don't like the way the world looks.
Oh, okay. One-to-one just doesn't do it for you.
It's just simply about the world doesn't look visually the way I need it to look.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
too real for you.
Someone did ask if I killed any gear on the trip.
Okay.
Carl Hemmings asked that. Only two of my five lenses.
Oh, Jesus. Are you serious?
Yeah, only two. Only my 70-200 and my 24-70.
Oh.
So I was stuck with a 10 to 24 and a 90 mil and a 50 mil. Yeah, and that was it. I killed one on day two.
Yeah.
My 70 to 200 died on day two because I dropped it in New York the other week.
Right.
And, it was working fine, but the image stabilizer jerked a bit every now and then. But then every time I tried to put it on the camera, it started making this short-circuiting kind of sounds.
Ooh.
Even when the camera was turned off.
Oh.
Which is a bit of a concern.
That's a bit scary.
I'm on both bodies, so I sort of decided not to put that on anymore. And then I decided to drop my camera with my 24-70 down three steps. And the camera came out okay, but the lens is going to be cracking and decided to stop working as well.
Ouch.
I don't know why. So, but once again, and this is what I'll be talking about in my travel seminar, when stuff goes wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, I had these visions of all these compressed 200mm shots I was going to be doing that I could no longer do.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, I'm now stuck with three focal lenses for the rest of the week.
You're telling me in a city like Delhi you couldn't have picked up a 70-200 2.8?
Yeah, but I'll probably have to pay for it.
Right. Of course, there is always that.
Pay for gear. I got in touch with Tamron Australia to see if they could get something through Tamron India, but there just wasn't enough time to negotiate at all.
Yeah.
But I didn't take it as a negative. Yeah, I took it as, well, here's a challenge.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So it's I ended up doing quite a lot of 14mm portraits.
Right.
14-18mm right in your face, uber wide angle portraits, and
sure.
Love the shots. Yeah.
Yep.
So it just challenged you to see the world differently and come out. So if you don't have all the gear, use what you've got. Just use it as best as you can.
Yeah. Well, I guess at least with the 50mm, you've got those extra couple of stops that you wouldn't have had with any of your other lenses.
Well, is that? And that was for the nighttime stuff, which was good. I always carry a full frame and a crop sensor body.
Right.
Full frame, a 35mm sensor and an APS-C. Yep. So the 90mm became like 150mm on one body, 90 on the other, so that was variation.
Yep.
The 10-24 works from 15-24 on one body and 10-24 on the other, so there's some variation.
Mm-hmm.
The 50mm was 50 on one and about 75. So that's, by having bodies with different
sensor sizes.
Factors, it gave you a bit more wiggle room as well. But
yeah, cool.
It all worked out.
Nice.
You got to deal with these things.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And the last thing that I had on my list was something I saw Daryl Gunga do throw up on his Facebook wall through the week, and it was a link to a blog post which had, amongst a bunch of other statistics, this particular stat, which Daryl took exception to. He said, I'm not sure that I agree with the numbers, but anyway, it was an interesting one. The claim was 90% of people have only ever taken a photo using a cell phone camera.
Yeah.
Which is a scary thought for those of us who, you know, who love our photography and...
I'd say in India that would be 95%.
Yeah, really?
Well, that's all anyone uses.
Yeah.
Is their cell phone. Yeah. The occasional kid using their iPad mini. But yeah, that's in some countries that is definitely so. As I say, with any of these, as we know, 47% of all statistics are made up on the spot. So don't always take that stuff with a grain of salt. There's only one statistic I've ever known that's been exactly spot on.
Right,
and that is that 100% of all divorces start in marriage.
Yes,
that's about the only infallible one of all those things. And it depends who you interview. You know, if you're interviewing college age students, high school students, maybe that's
sure
is about right.
Yep.
You know, I'd like to know if they said in the article who the demographic for the survey was.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, and certainly in some, if you go to China or India or any of these developing countries, you'll find that is probably a very close statistic.
Yeah.
Very accurate.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
As you say, you know, third world countries, they're not going to spend on luxuries like DSLRs. So,
developing countries.
Sorry.
It's like calling a midget a dwarf, a midget, or no, a little bit. No, but it, see, now you got me in trouble with the I can't say the wee folk either, can I?
Shut up, Glenn. Speak well in your head.
It's the drugs I'm on from a cold. Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, you should get some rest over the weekend now that you don't have to conduct a workshop tomorrow.
Yeah, so I'll just look after my six-year-old kid.
Yes, and we'll try and aim to hook up on Tuesday night.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right, mate, well, you have a good one.
Thanks, mate. It's good to be back.
Excellent. Good to have you back. And, yeah, once again, absolutely love the images out of India. Very jealous.
Thanks, mate. Come along next time.
Yeah. Definitely. All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Now, as promised, like I said earlier on in the week, I caught up with Hiya Jan Camps from Trigger Trap, and we had a bit of a chat. So Glyn was unfortunately laid low at the time, and so I just had the chat with Hiya on my own. So here's the interview. So we are joined tonight by Hiya Jan Camps, who is actually, what is your role with Trigger Trap, Hiya?
Originally, there was just me, so Trigger Trap was me.
Right.
But then over time, we amassed some more staff and some more clever people, and now I am the CEO.
Fantastic.
Which is a really, really lovely way of saying that I'm a very glorified admin assistant, to be honest. all the clever stuff is actually done by the clever people around me. But, you know, I'm...
But clearly it was your idea to begin with.
Yeah, but ideas are cheap. You know, that's kind of the basic premise of any business. You know, if you get enough clever people in a room, they'll come up with 100 clever ideas. It's the execution. That's the big challenge, I find.
Right. Right. But, I mean, obviously, I mean, you must have had the idea for what you wanted Trigger Trap to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before you started amassing the talent around you.
Well, you'd say that, but really, what happened was that the whole Kickstarter project was around creating a high-speed camera trigger.
Right.
2 years ago, in fact. And I had never created a product before, so I figured, hey, let me give this a stab and see what happens. And let's see where it takes us.
Wow.
But it turns out that's actually kind of a tricky thing to do because I knew nothing about manufacturing at all. But, you know, it was kind of a slightly naive stab at, hey, this sounds like fun. Let's give this a shot.
Wow.
And then when it became very successful on Kickstarter, I kind of was faced with the horrifying realization that, well, we're actually going to have to build this now. And that's when I scrambled around and said, okay, I need some people who are clever enough to help me actually build this and support
now
it.
Now I need some people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, precisely.
Excellent. So it began purely as a high-speed trigger and nothing more than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the original idea, or actually to rewind it a little bit further even, I was just writing books about photography. That's kind of my thing.
Right.
So I'm an author. I've written 7 or 8 books about photography. And, you know, as part of that, I wanted to do one on DIY photography, so building your own kit.
Yeah.
So lighting, modifiers, all that sort of stuff. And one of the things I wanted to do was to try and build my own camera completely from scratch.
Now, wow.
Turns out that's really, really hard. And
you're a real underachiever, aren't you?
I know, it's terrible. Well, I did fail. So that's got to count for something, right? But no, the thing was, I basically kind of wanted to do a Kickstarter campaign with something because I discovered Kickstarter. I thought it was cool, yeah. And that was kind of where it came from, which is kind of hilarious because I was just talking to I was actually in New York last week talking to Kickstarter, and they said, oh, wow, most people actually start with a product and then try and find a way of making it happen. You started with Kickstarter and tried to find a product. I was like, yeah. but I just wanted to, as part of this whole building my own camera malarkey, I built a high speed, like a laser trigger. So just a laser beam, yep, that points across a thing, you drop a droplet through it, it breaks the laser beam, it turns the laser off, and then takes a picture.
Right.
So you can get a consistent droplet photography.
Yep.
So that turned out to actually be a relatively achievable afternoon project for somebody who didn't know much about electronics.
Right.
But, you know, that was a giant pile of wires, which totally was not at all a product. It, you know, it was very flaky, very tricky to use. And, you know, the only way to change any settings was to recompile the code and re-upload it to the board kind of thing.
Right.
So I thought, hey, well, what if I could turn this into an actual product? So I spoke to an electronics guy and said, hey, you know, this is kind of a cool idea. Nobody else is doing this. Can we turn this into a Kickstarter project? And from there, it kind of got completely out of hand because he was like, well, you've got all this processing power. You're not really using much of it. So in addition to a laser sensor, what else do you think we can do? And I was like, oh, well, a sound sensor would be cool. So we added a sound sensor. I was like, oh, time lapse would be wicked. So we added time lapse and just kind of from there. So it kind of completely grew out of control before we even launched a Kickstarter project.
Wow.
But yeah, nothing if not ambitious.
That's awesome. So was this pre-Arduino days?
This was Arduino. This was
right.
The early Arduino Duemilanove, I think it was called. Like the
okay.
One of the very first Arduino boards. And this was kind of how I got into that stuff anyway. I mean, I...
So just for the non-technical members of the audience, do you want to describe what Arduino is for those who don't understand?
I would love to, but I probably won't be able to do it justice. So basically what an Arduino is, if you want to do integrated circuit computing. So imagine, for example, your fridge will have a tiny little computer in it that has a sensor, which basically is just a little thing that measures the temperature, and then it turns the cooling thing on and off. Yeah, exactly. And it turns the cooling thing on and off, but make sure it doesn't turn it off and on like 1,000 times a second, because that will break your compressor in the fridge and all that kind of stuff. So it's actually kind of a little bit intelligent. It has a little bit of logic in it. Now, to program that, traditionally, is actually really tricky, because you need a special programmer, you need like flash memory and all that kind of stuff. Now, what Arduino did was is create a platform around one of those microcontroller chips with, you know, simple ways of adding sensors and outputs and all that kind of stuff, and a relatively understandable programming language.
Right.
So it became a sort of a platform and a gateway for a lot of people who, you know, are a little bit into programming. So I've done a little bit of web stuff, which I, again, am not very good at, but good enough at to get myself into trouble.
Right.
And I just figured it would be cool to be able to do hardware stuff as well.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the gateway, without having to learn that many new skills, without having to, you know, go knee-deep in soldering fluid, kind of learn more about the hardware side of things. So it kind of is an interface between learning how to do programming and learning how to program for hardware.
Yeah, nice. Wow. And so it all grew from there.
Yeah, kind of a little bit crazy. So we finished our Kickstarter project, which was 300% funded. We were looking for $25,000 and ended up at $77,000 or something like that, which is incredibly flattering and really, you know, it was one of those things where I thought, oh, wow, I I didn't really expect to hit this goal, yep. and somehow we've hit it three times over. Yep. So that is a very strong sign that people actually want this stuff.
And so was that what then gave you the funding to bankroll the next stage with the mobile app, or what came next?
Well, so that's kind of a funny one, because I had kind of dismissed the idea of a mobile app completely. I was talking to a friend of mine, Matt, who's now the CTO of the company, and he said, oh, why don't you do this as a mobile app? And I said, that's a crazy idea. I'm never doing that. And of course, as it turns out. Anyway, so about 6 months later, when I was working on this whole making Trigger Trap V1 happen and kind of doing all the electronics and stuff, we ran into some interesting challenges with how to do an interface and how to actually make it easy to use. And I kind of came full circle. I was like, well, what would a good interface be? Actually, it would be cool to be able to use a screen people carry in their pocket anyway. Yeah. And hey, it does have sensors in it. Maybe, mm-hmm. So I called up Matt again. I said, hey, you know that idea I completely laughed at a few months ago? do you know anybody who can help me code that? And he was like, well, actually, funny story. I've just finished a huge freelance project. I've got a bit of a cash in the bank. You know, I can help you do it. So we set up the company properly and kind of got going. And as it turns out, the mobile solution launched pretty much exactly at the same time as we were able to ship the other one, because, you know, developing for mobile is much, much faster. And the hardware component of this mobile solution is just way, way simpler.
You mean like the cable with the dongle?
Yeah, the dongle thing is, you know, it's much, much, much simpler. It's the first version only had two components in it. You know, as it turns out, that wasn't the best solution. So the new one has like 22 components or something in it.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's like an old version and a new version. But
this is the cable to go with the mobile app.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's like there was a silent revision at some point where the point where the cable turned red was also the point where all the electronics changed.
Oh, okay. So if I've got the red cable, that means I've got the second version of it. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
So yeah, exactly. So the fun thing was that the mobile version actually turned out to give us a lot more flexibility, because obviously the phone has a lot of sensors built in. There's a microphone, there's a camera, it has vibration sensors,
gyroscope.
A good clock, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we could do a lot of things that we couldn't do with the V1 and make it a lot cheaper for people, because the hardware was a lot easier to make. You know, we can churn out another 10,000 dongles in weeks if we need to.
Yeah.
And that was a completely different idea for us, because, you know, the complexity of manufacturing the V1 was mind-blowing, whereas the complexity of creating new dongles was, you know, comparatively very easy.
Yeah.
And we have some very clever software people on board now. We have one person working full-time on Android, and he's working with freelancers and stuff and to kind of make the Android version as good as it can be.
Yep.
And they're working on the iOS version in a similar fashion. And, you know, so we now have three full-time developers and tech guys who are just working on making these products as good as they can be. Now, in the meantime, we have the other product, which is now on Kickstarter, which is called RedSnap, which kind of does the same thing as the Trigger Trap V1 does, except it does it way, way, way better.
And I've got to say, it's a far sexier looking unit.
It is. No, absolutely. I mean, the RedSnap shows how much you'll learn in 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
And also what you can do when you have a little bit more money. We've already spent an incredible amount of cash on developing this thing so far, which meant that we were able to get some really clever people. You know, our industrial designer is an ex-Dyson guy, you know, the Hoovers.
Nice.
So, you know, he really, really knows his stuff. And the funny thing is, when you're working with talented people, it turns out that they can actually bring the cost down.
Right.
So what we said is that, look, what we want to do is create this, but we have to design it to a price point because we want to make it really accessible for people. You know, I don't want to create a product that costs $1,000 because then it really restricts the market.
Yeah.
And I want everybody who has a camera to own one of these things. So we have to do something clever with pricing.
Yep.
And so with that constraint in place, the electronic guys and the industrial designers and the software guys have gone away and kind of worked to that constraint. So you say, okay, well, your budget is, you know, $10 per this thing, and your budget is $15 per that thing. And they go away and say, well, okay, these are the components we can use. I'd love to be able to use this to make it, you know, sexier or sleeker or smaller or whatever.
Yep.
But It's like, well, sorry, you know your budget, stick to it. And that basically means that the device is now way, way, way better than it ever was. But it also means that we're able to keep the price point roughly the same because, you know, yeah, it's just manufacturing this thing is a completely different
I suppose the beautiful thing about having, you know, that brains trust bringing you all those great ideas and saying, well, if I had a slightly bigger budget, I could do X, that just gives you a platform to create, you know, a second tier level of the product.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, I mean, a higher priced version that does more.
Yeah. I mean, that's been the biggest challenge in all of this, to say no to some of the really good ideas. You know, people on Kickstarter, especially, and via email and via our forums and stuff, we've had so many amazing ideas. And we're like, wow, that is, you know, this product is something that I think should exist.
Yep.
But we don't want to create a product that costs $500, you know. We want to make it affordable and accessible. And part of that is just saying, well, yes, that's a great idea, but no, we're not going to do it because this is not that product. But of course, it does go in the ideas bank, and who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe next year, maybe the year after that.
So where are you at with your next round of funding for the Red Snap? How close are you?
So the Red Snap is doing really, really well. We have... we were looking for a lot more money in this one. So the last one, we were looking for $25,000. This one, we were looking for £50,000. So it's nearly three times more.
Yeah, right.
The funny thing is, it's actually, you know, we got 300% funding the first time around. That is basically our funding goal this time around.
Right.
So it was very ambitious indeed. So we were looking for £50,000, and that we were fully funded in less than 12 hours.
Wow.
Which was just absolutely mind-numbingly amazing. And now, as I'm saying this, we are at 400%.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just been insane. We've had £200,000 that's come in.
Wow.
And it's amazing. You know, we knew this product should exist. We didn't realize quite how much people desperately wanted it.
Yeah.
So it's a great way of kind of confirming to us that we've made some good choices because... You know, people definitely are willing to give us money before the product exists, which is
definitely
really humbling.
You know, I mean, I've not, you know, played with either the V1 of Trigger Trap or, you know, anything other than just the mobile app with the cable. And I shoot Sony myself. And I absolutely love it. And I haven't used every feature that's built into the thing yet. I've still only used two or three of the modes, but one of these days I will get around to using more of it. But I think it's just the best thing ever. And for, I think, what was $30, I think it cost me for the cable. It's brilliant.
I think that's why I'm so proud of this tool, because the thing that happens is that, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't use everything. The app is free.
Yeah,
and the actual cable costs less than a Canon remote, so you kind of may as well.
That's it. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Canon remotes, because my co-host Glyn, who couldn't be with us as we were recording this interview, he shoots Canon, and Glyn has a bee in his bonnet about why we have these, you know, amazingly, you know, beefy in terms of computing power DSLRs these days. Mm-hmm. And yet they all max out with their, you know, their shutter speeds at 30 seconds. You know, they all have a bulb mode. But Glyn's argument is, you know, there's all this computing power. Why can't I just dial in the number of minutes or seconds or hours even that I want the shutter to remain open? The computing power is there in the DSLR. Why can't we have it? And I keep saying
it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy because, you know, it's not even computer power. They've been able to do this kind of stuff for a decade at least, if not longer.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, what Canon has decided is that, you know, they love sports photographers. And that's kind of true for every camera brand. You know, they announce how fast it can go. Oh, this one does 1/8,000th of a second.
Yeah.
They don't announce how slow it can go.
Yeah.
And I kind of get that because, you know, while long exposure photography is a very cool thing to do, it's not very sexy, is it? I mean, it's not something, oh, look, we have the slowest camera on the market. Excellent. But I'm cheering them on to keep it that way so people will buy more Trigger Trap.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the expected time, you know, for product to market with the Red Snap?
So Red Snap is interesting because obviously we have a Kickstarter campaign and we have a working prototype. We have the look and feel prototype, which kind of allows us to lift it and hold it and touch it and stroke it and do all sorts of other things to it, to kind of give you a feeling for what it feels like in the hand and how the ergonomics work and all that kind of stuff. Getting it from there to production, there's still quite a few steps to go because we have, we have to do a final production prototype. We have to do some in the field testing so people can get a good feeling for how well it works and all that kind of stuff. But we're still hoping to actually start shipping in May. It's looking like that is still the case. And yeah, fingers crossed, I think that should be possible.
You got to love small companies. They move so much quicker than big companies.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you think about how long it would take, you know, a Microsoft or a, you know, an Adobe or whoever, you know, to try and bring a product like this to market. I know they're both software companies, but
yeah,
you get the idea. You know, you get any large corporation and they're just weighed down in bureaucracy where clearly being, you know, a smaller entity, you can just make these decisions and move so much quicker, which is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's really refreshing. I mean, I've worked in some big companies. I think we kind of have the luxury of being small. Because what happens is that when we place an order to the factory, we might order 10,000 units, you know? Whereas somebody like Apple doesn't have that luxury.
No, exactly.
When they make a new iPhone, they know they're going to ship 5, 6, 7, 8 million in the first weekend. And, you know, that is nice for them, but I can just imagine the absolute nightmare of, especially with their whole secrecy thing, you know, of trying to somehow smuggle 5 million of something into a warehouse and then start shipping them as soon as they announce it.
Yeah.
You know, my dad had a fantastic thing to me. I was like, when I was kind of talking about volumes and stuff and shipping and all that kind of stuff. And I said, oh, it's only 500 things. There's no problem. I'll ship them all out myself. And he was like, okay, before you decide to ship anything out yourself, I want you to take an entire ream of A4 paper and I want you to fold every single sheet in half.
Yep.
And I was like, that's insane. It's going to take me ages. He's like, well, that's 500 sheets. Yeah. Imagine how long it's going to take you to ship 500 of anything. And if you then multiply that up to 5 million, you know, I couldn't fit 5 million sheets of paper in my office.
No.
Never mind 5 million iPhones. It's just absolutely mind-boggling.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we have an absolute luxury of being able to have the luxury of fewer customers. But it means that we're able to, you know, everybody in a company knows everything about what's going on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that just doesn't happen in a bigger company.
No.
So, you know, when something happens in support, we can have a discussion with the whole company and say, well, you know, maybe we should do this differently, or maybe we should change something, or maybe we should look at this in a different way or whatever. It just changes how you run the company and how you make decisions. And it's a really good place to be, I think.
Fantastic.
Having said that, I would absolutely love to be able to ship 5 million things, but I think we have to grow the company a little bit first.
Possibly. Well, mate, I wish you well with it. I am very happy with the mobile app, and I look forward to seeing the Red Snap when it comes to market.
Fantastic.
And I wish you all the best with it.
Thank you very much.
Is there anything you want to, you know, add or promote or, you know, leak before we wrap
up? Leaking. I like it. So what I would strongly recommend is that people join our mailing list, because we have a very good Christmas promotion coming up. If you're looking to buy for yourself or buy for a friend, there's a very good promotion coming up, and we'll announce it on the newsletter in the next few weeks. So that might be worth chatting about.
Cool. And where can people sign up to that mailing list?
If you go to triggertrap.com/news, there's a button right at the top.
So if you go to triggertrap.com, click the news and blog tab, and from there is a button to sign up to the newsletter.
Excellent.
Hiya. Well, mate, all the best, and we'll have to get you back on next year when the Red Snap comes out and have a chat about it and find out where the company's at and what products you're working on after the Red Snap.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to.
All right. Well, we look forward to talking to you then. That was Hiya Jan Camps from Trigger Trap, and that Red Snap project looks extremely interesting, so I can't wait to get an update on that sort of first quarter of next year. All right, that's it for this episode, and until we speak with you next, take care.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.